One night at like 2 o'clock in the morning, the dog was going a little ape shit at the back door, and it woke me up, and I went to see what was going on. There was a dude in my backyard, and I opened up the sliding glass door, and I'm holding on to the dog's collar, and he's just like, and I'm like, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, I'm sorry, man. There's a Pikachu in your yard. I was like, oh, carry on.
The network children ask for by name. The Defenestrate Media Network.
What happens when mixtapes meet memes? This is Gen Zex. Join JM Bell and Braxton Bunnell as they break down the news, music, movies, trends, and moments that shape Gen X and the world Gen Z is creating right now. We're judging the worlds that raised us, from landlines to smartphones. This is Gen Zex, the culture that was versus the culture that's trending.
You're listening to the world's greatest multi-generational pop culture podcast, starring Braxton.
Hello.
And me. Hello.
Hello.
Hey, buddy. Do you mind if I hear at the top of the show just leak a little left show?
No, go for it.
So, I watched the United States lose their match last night. 4-1. And just based on the soccer of it, they played sloppy, they played tired, they played lethargic. However, one of the star players, Balogun, whom we've been talking about quite a bit because he's so fucking good, got a red card in the last game and was sent off, which meant a suspension for this game. And the truth is, and you know, you have a, you. It's easy to make excuses for people that you like, and I really like Balogun. But the truth is it was a cleats up foul, and when you foul with your cleats up, that is a red card. And it doesn't matter that it was accidental. He had his cleats up, and he went, and they spiked right into the other player's leg. It's a red card. It sucks. It fucking sucks. Then came news that FIFA, that corrupt organization, had reversed the one-game suspension on that red card and was going to let Balogun play. And reporters asked Fluffernutter Tino, or whatever the fuck his name is, the head of FIFA, they're like, you know, did Trump have anything to do with this? And he's like, no. This is an independent agency, yada, yada. It's all. And we're like, well, okay, feels dirty, but awesome. Trump, being Trump, could not, for the life of him, shut the fuck up and went on his little truth Twitter and and sheeted, because that's what I'm calling them now, sheets. It's spelled like shit, but said with a funny accent. He went on and was like, no, this was me. I called Fluffertino in, you know, and asked for the review. I know sports. I know sports better than anybody. I mean, I don't even know what a red card is, he says. I swear to God. You know, but it didn't look like a foul to me. And I'm like, well, you are the boot. So, of course, you wouldn't see a shoe foul. There is a part of me that believes that, A, USA played so bad because they were fucking embarrassed by what Trump did. Balogun went to the coach of the other team yesterday, Belgium, and apologized for what had happened. And that coach, bless his heart, really nice guy apparently, was like, you know what, dude, not your fault. That's great. Had the United States won that game, it would have been a win with an asterisk, in which the United States cheated on the world stage. And three, I was feeling patriotism. I was feeling it. I was there. I was excited. I left the fucking house yesterday and went and spent time with one of my cousins that I haven't seen, I've seen him a little at funerals, but we really haven't spent time together in decades. And we went over to his house and had dinner, and we were going to go watch the game. And I was excited for the game and stuff like that. But the truth is I just felt uneasy going into the game because we had cheated already. Mm-hmm. And, you know, no, I don't think the United States guys, I don't think the U.S. men's national team threw the game. But they were not spirited. They were not excited. They were lethargic. They were dispirited. And I think it had a lot to do with the fact that no matter what they did, they have been branded as cheaters because of Trump.
Yeah, through like no fault of their own.
None. And it just made everything pure about enjoying these teams from all over the world playing each other and all of the amazing fucking, you know, plays and games and players that I've really, really had a good time watching. It made it all sour. Mm-hmm. I've got the Argentina game on now, and I could give a shit. And I'm trying really hard to buckle up because I want England to do well because, you know, Scotland's out, United States is out, England's my last one, mm-hmm. and it's got a bunch of Arsenal guys on it. But I'll go into length on this on the Left Show more than likely next week. But, you know, I'm pretty pissed. I'm pretty upset. And it's just one more facet of life that garbage person has just soured, has just tainted, has just dirtied where he had no business being and nobody wanted him there. You know?
It is super frustrating that just the most unlikable people you have ever met need to be involved with everything that's fun.
Yeah. Whether it be Trump or whether it be like those weird people that throw parties in offices.
Mm. Well, that's like you got to use the budget. You can't carry a deficit or an overage. The next quarter, they're gonna take that shit away. Got to throw like five birthday parties.
It's
for
not. It's
Lisa's
the,
cat.
Yeah, it's the mandatory participation that I've had at many of my corporate gigs.
Mm.
Like, hey, we're having a birthday party for so and so. Oh yeah, what time? Okay, yeah, I got a thing at that time. They're like, everybody comes.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, but I hate parties.
Yeah, but I don't want to.
and I hate birthdays, and I have work to do. So anyway, that's my little rant, little 5 minutes off the top of the show. You know, it's pop culture, it's culture. So I feel like we're okay to talk about it. I'm just upset, and I'm mad, and I'm deflated, and I'm sad. And the truth is, I think that the guys on the men's national team this year really deserved better than what they were handed by this administration.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Hey, buddy, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm not super into like the soccer or I get football, but I do like the sport and I like the camaraderie that comes with it. And it sucks seeing it ruined by just the worst people ever.
Yep. Yep. It really does.
The same with every other, you know, aspect of living in this country that I somewhat enjoy sometimes.
I mean, don't get me wrong. It's not as bad as blowing up a school full of little girls.
Oh yeah.
Which he's also done.
Yes.
But this is pretty pissy-making for me, you mm-hmm. know?
No, there are levels to this.
Yeah, this just happens to be today's level.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still mad about the little girls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tomorrow will be some new, unforeseen, horrible thing we could have never thought of in our lives, and we'll have to grapple with that.
My God, what eldritch horror is this?
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Look, if any fucking politician could ever accidentally summon Cthulhu, it'd be this dipshit. And it wouldn't be because he had it memorized. It would be because he was mumbling while shitting himself and just accidentally made the sounds.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you want to talk about politicians dealing with Cthulhu? We can hop into it.
Okay, let's do it.
So, We need to go back not all that far, about 10 years, to 2016.
Okay.
In June, British voters narrowly approved a referendum to withdraw from the European Union. November 8th, Donald Trump wins the U.S. presidential election, defeating Hillary Clinton, propelling us into the timeline we currently live in.
Sorry, I threw up in my mouth a little bit.
In July, the wildly popular mobile game Pokemon Go was released.
Dude, I was running a gubernatorial campaign. Mm-hmm. We ended up, I'm going to use all the words wrong because it's been 10 years, but we ended up being a Pokestop about 300 yards from a gym.
Mm-hmm.
So we would seed, what was it, throw raspberries or whatever into the thing so people could swing by and fill up their whatevers.
Mm-hmm.
I spent someone's money doing this constantly. For weeks. Low level expenditure, but if you go and you go to the place where they keep the forms for things that you've spent money on in a campaign, Pokemon Go was on every fucking report.
That's so awesome.
And so people would come in because the building we were in was pretty big, so they would have to actually come in the building and we'd pitch them on volunteerism. And it worked. It fucking worked.
It did.
Yeah. And then the gym was over at Pat's Barbecue,
mm-hmm.
a few hundred yards away. And so, you know, every couple of days we'd go over to Pat's Barbecue and have some lunch and fight our little Pokemons. And, you know, it was great. I mean, it was the world came together for at least 3 months when Pokemon Go came out.
It was, yeah, that was a really strange experience. I remember I couldn't play Pokemon Go because the phone I had at the time couldn't run it.
No.
But everyone else in my family had a phone that could play it.
Boom.
So I got to be the driver taking them to Pokestops.
Well, I had children, so I was also the fucking driver.
Mm.
I mean, and it was weird because like one night at like 2 o'clock in the morning, the dog was going a little ape shit at the back door. And it woke me up and I went to see what was going on. There was a dude in my backyard and I opened up the sliding glass door and I'm holding on to the dog's collar and he's just like, and I'm like, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, I'm sorry, man. There's a Pikachu in your yard. I was like, oh, carry on.
Continue.
Oh, you're playing Pokemon Go. You're no harm to me.
Yeah.
And then a couple of days later, we were at the field behind the elementary school that my kids went to, and I was trying to catch a Jigglypuff. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
And what are the ponies that are on made of fire?
That's the small one is Ponyta. The big one's Rapidash.
Right, it was one of those.
Yeah.
And I was desperate to catch one for whatever reason. I still can't remember. And Matthias was with me, and Matthias was very, very young. Mm-hmm. And I was like 3 minutes, I think, where I was just kind of walking towards this thing and throwing Pokeballs at it. And I caught it, and I was all happy, and I turned around to tell Matthias I caught it, and he's fucking nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Just gone. And I'm like, what the fuck? And so I start yelling and screaming and calling his name. And I finally get him to answer the phone. I'm like, where the hell are you? He's like, oh, there's a Pikachu in this guy's backyard. And I'm trying to figure out how to get through the fence. And I'm like, stop. Don't move. I'll be right there. And then we went and knocked on the door and asked if we could go in his backyard. He also played. And he was like, yeah, go ahead. It was fucking nuts. The world went fucking nuts there for about 3 months. It was great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember like even later being out walking my dog at like a park and being with Daylin, and she would see people like in a car parked and ask what they were doing, and I'd see the phone glowing and it's like, oh, they're playing Pokemon Go.
Yep.
They're there just sitting in the car playing Pokemon Go.
Yeah, it was a delight. I'm sorry, I interrupted. Yeah. Also, by the way,
fun.
Smooth transition, sir. That was fucking award winning.
Oh, thank you.
You bet. Okay, carry on. Sorry.
Pop star passings. The world lost global icons, including Prince in April and David Bowie in January.
Yeah, that was a rough year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very rough. On July 4th, NASA's Juno spacecraft successfully entered the orbit of Jupiter. In the world of music, topping the charts at number one on July 9th of 2016, we have One Dance featuring Drake, Wizkid, and Kayla. Can't Stop the Feeling by Justin Timberlake. Panda by Designer. I am so over that song. It's not even funny.
I don't even know it.
You would know it if you heard it.
Panda?
Panda by Designer. DESIIGNER.
Okay.
Top movies for July of 2016. Finding Dory continued to dominate the domestic and international box office, maintaining its position as one of the highest grossing films of the summer. Star Trek Beyond, the highly anticipated sci-fi sequel, blasted into theaters on July 22nd.
That was a good movie. I like that movie.
It was very good. I really like the...
The Kelvin universe?
Yes. Yes, I quite enjoy those. They're very fun.
Yeah, I like them too. They've got problems, and I can overlook them because they're Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. And then, on July 25th, 2016, in Shinjuku, July 29th, 2016, in the rest of Japan, and October, or I believe it was it October or August? I think it was August that had the first release mm-hmm. here in the U.S. for Shin Godzilla.
Okay. I'm ready. I watched it again. It said, watch again? Question mark? And mm-hmm. I went, I don't remember watching this. We must have just played it in the shop.
Yes.
You know?
More than likely.
And as it went on minute to minute till about 10 minutes, I was like, oh, yeah, I remember this one. Mm-hmm. But I kept watching. So I kept watching. So we'll get to that. But
yeah.
Pray continue.
This movie, to me, is... It's a return to the roots of Godzilla. Because the first 1954 one was a warning against the use of nuclear weapons.
Yes.
Because Godzilla shows up after a nuclear bomb goes off and wreaks havoc. And he is man's will to destroy incarnate. And my feeling is that it is the exact same in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Because mm-hmm. instead of coming from a nuclear bomb, this Godzilla comes from pollution.
That's a good warning.
Mm-hmm. And the whole movie is just about government ineptitude and the fear of doing the wrong thing so you don't act fast enough.
I'm going to put a point in that.
Mm-hmm.
The government ineptitude is by the highest tier. And I've got notes about this because mm-hmm. some of the lower functionaries in that government really mm-hmm. had their shit together.
Uh-huh.
I will explain in a moment. Please go on.
Yeah. And I mean, it's as basic as a Godzilla movie plot gets
mm-hmm.
At its core. I mean, Godzilla shows up, wreaks havoc, disappears, shows up again, wreaks havoc. The government finally comes together and defeats him. But, you know, at its core, it's this story of, or this, I guess this warning of, we are not taking care of the environment and our government is not going to help us when things go bad.
Right. Like dumping nuclear water into the ocean at Fukushima.
Mm-hmm.
Oopsie-daisy.
Yeah, and it shows, and I think Godzilla's stages in this movie kind of reflect the the seriousness at which the climate disaster has advanced. So you start out with the little guy, Kamada Kun. He comes up and he's, you know, crawling on the ground. He's breaking some stuff. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, as time goes on, he gets bigger and it becomes more of an issue. And now he's breaking more stuff. And now he's shooting lasers and he's lighting the city on fire and he's immune to bombs and nothing can stop him.
He's like a teenager in Spanish Fork, Utah on the 4th of July.
It's just, yeah, everything within like a 4 mile radius is done. It's over. It's a wash. But yeah, and I mean, not to say this movie is like a complete and total bummer. Still, one of my favorite lines of this movie is, it's after a complete and total bummer when the helicopter with all the government officials gets blown up by Godzilla.
Yay!
Which, like, why would you put them all on one helicopter? Like, there's a giant lizard shooting lasers outside. And we're going to put every high-ranking government official on one helicopter.
And then fly over to take a look.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I believe it's the Secretary of Agriculture gets the job because he's just the next in line after everyone dies. And they put him in the desk and he's got his ramen in front of him. And he finishes the meeting and he goes to eat it. And he says, the noodles got soggy. They told me this job wouldn't be easy.
I do remember that line. I went, wait, what? That's funny.
Yeah. But yeah, I want to hear what you thought about it because, I mean, zero secret. I am a massive Godzilla fan.
Oh, yeah.
I'm psychically compelled to buy anything with Godzilla on it.
This is not, I know you love this movie, but mm-hmm. this is not one of my favorite Godzilla movies.
Oh, sure.
Now, they have a lot of meetings.
Yes.
And the first thing I noticed was that lower functionaries brought cases and cases of paper to stick next to their printer copy machines.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I was like, oh, they're planning ahead. That's good. A lot of wacky-ass camera angles in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Because all I can see is the cinematographer and you know, probably the director are just like, you know, we only have a limited monster budget, so we got to make everything look pretty fucking cool. You know, so there were some weird, somebody put a camera on an office chair and pushed it around kind of shots, you know, and there was one tracking pan shot underneath a table that I still don't understand completely.
Like, yeah.
That's a choice. I like that.
You can see a lot of his directing style in the other stuff that he's made. So this was directed by Hideaki Anno.
Mm-hmm.
And Hideaki Anno was incredibly famous before this because he made Neon Genesis Evangelion.
Okay.
Which was, I don't know if you, did you ever see it? It was an anime.
I believe I have seen it, but.
Yeah. So it was a mecha and starts out as a mecha anime where you're fighting like with giant robots called Evas fighting these angels that are coming to destroy the world. And throughout the series, it turns into a discussion of like art and the death of art and like how he feels as an artist watching this thing that he made get slowly turned into like a marketable thing that he never wanted to see.
Oh, like Alan Moore.
Mm-hmm. And then he, like, the budget ran out, so the last episode is awful, so he made the end of Evangelion movie. And then there's been several spinoffs, but this, the themes in this are very much, very Evangelion-coded. Same with his Shin Ultraman that he did and the Shin Kamen Rider that he did in 2022 and 2023, respectively.
Okay. All right. So let's see. Note number three, lots of meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Note number four, all caps, lots of meetings.
Yep.
My favorite is they're in the middle of a meeting and they're like, nope, a creature has come out of the ocean. Mm-hmm. Well, we better adjourn this meeting. I'm like, no, this is why you have a meeting. There's a creature coming out of the ocean, guys.
Yep.
Let's adjourn this meeting. I'm like, what?
So we can go get in another one.
Yeah. Yeah. And then after that, I have a note. More office equipment. More giant printer copy machines getting in. More cases of paper. Just like, let's adjourn this meeting and have another meeting. And they're like, okay. And all the little worker drones show up and stack their paper next to their goddamn copy machines. And I'm just like, what? Whoever was the script supervisor on this, you know, was mm-hmm. has definitely worked in a corporate environment and understands what's needed at a time like this. This is the one where we kind of watch Godzilla evolve throughout the movie.
Yes.
In early iterations, give me the giggles. He's standing in the river and you're like, oh, okay, he's Godzilla looking. And then all of a sudden he just kind of puts his chest on the ground and runs real fast. And it's like,
yep.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, that's the, I believe that one's Kamada-kun is what he's been like dubbed. He doesn't have like, I think he's just officially known as like stage one.
Uh-huh.
Or I think he's technically stage two because the tail in the water is stage one.
Okay.
But yeah, this is stage two, but the community dubbed him Kamada-kun because he lands in Kamada.
Okay. And then note number seven, soft jazz, ?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That one cracked me up.
There's a little bit of that.
Yep. And then my last note is office equipment, LOL, because they did it again.
Yep.
Yeah. But no, so it's a Godzilla movie, so I don't go into those because Minus One hadn't come out yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't go into a Godzilla movie expecting to be transformed. You know, it's not fucking Schindler's List.
Mm-hmm.
Which is another reason why I can watch them over and over again, because I will never watch Schindler's List again. Talk about a movie that bummed me the fuck out.
Oh, yes.
So sad. So, I mean, brilliant, wonderful, good message, etc. Such a good movie. But much like Requiem for a Dream, that's a one and done. Mm-hmm. So as much as I like to poke fun at this particular movie, and I remember when you had me watch it a couple of years ago, I think you and I had a discussion where I went through a list much like this through my head.
Mm-hmm.
Because the office equipment just makes it brings me joy.
No, it is funny because I've never worked in like a super corporate environment like mm-hmm. that. So it's nice to know that that's like accurate to what would be done.
Yeah, I've worked for candidates, I've worked for campaigns, and I've worked for the government.
Mm-hmm.
And when I worked for the government, when we knew something was coming, you'd just out of the habit, you'd run over and grab a fucking box of paper and stick mm-hmm. it next to your printer because you knew you were going to burn through it. That part cracks me up.
Okay. But no, it's this movie's awesome. It's amazing. I love the Godzilla design. Shin Godzilla, the final form, is one of my like favorite.
Yeah.
Godzilla designs.
Absolutely agree.
It's just so different.
Yeah.
To anything that we had seen before, and having him be able to like evolve and change throughout the story to meet his environment. And like at the very end, you get that final shot when they fill him up with, I can't remember if it was like the concrete or like liquid nitrogen or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they basically like cool his blood until he freezes solid. And you get that panning shot going up his tail and you see the creatures coming off. And then you realize, oh, he was still evolving.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the next step is little mini Godzillas running around all over the place.
Oh, yeah, like the Matthew Broderick one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they released, like, some creature designs for what those were going to look like. And they look like humanoid, like people with Godzilla tails, no eyes, and a huge mouth.
Yeah.
And so I wish we had gotten to see that, but I understand why. But I think this really set the stage for Godzilla being taken a little bit more seriously again
mm-hmm.
as a film. And I think Shin Godzilla is what allowed Minus One to win an Oscar.
Okay. I mean, the tone on this one was less campy than previous Godzilla movies.
Mm-hmm.
I will absolutely give you that one. Everything that cracked me up in this was just some business off to the side. You know, the Godzilla storyline didn't bother me at all. I liked it. Other than I can't remember Kamala Khan. What was it again? the first iteration of Godzilla in this one?
Oh, Kamada-kun.
Kamada-kun. Not Kamala Khan. That's Ms. Marvel. other than that, which I thought was very silly looking, you know, it's a solid fucking movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, yeah, as much as I tease, because like I said, this isn't one of my favorite ones. But I did. Look, we did the other Godzilla, King of the Monsters.
Yeah.
A couple of months ago. And I like those movies. But the truth is, as much as I like them, I do like the older actual Japanese ones more.
Yeah.
Because I remember, and I've told part of this before, when we were young, you know, on Wednesdays, the theater, the multi-screen theater, we didn't have a word megaplex yet, you could drop your kids off on a Wednesday morning with $5 and they'd get to see three movies. You could buy snacks or whatever with your $5, but you get to see three movies. It was usually like, you know, an Abbott and Costello and then a cartoon and then a Godzilla movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I fucking loved them. That was the highlight of my day when we would get abandoned at the theater.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was 10.
Okay.
Yeah, our parents, let's be multi-generational for a minute. Yeah, our parents really were not all that great on parental responsibilities in the moment.
Oh, my parents were.
Yeah, we just...
My parents were really locked in on that. My parents struck a very good balance of letting me fail on my own and letting me kind of have freedom, but still being around to enforce like guidance and...
Yeah.
Rules and shit.
Yeah. No, mine were there after the fact. When I fucked up, they were there punitively.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but in the meantime, there's a road by my mom's house and it's a 35 mile an hour road. It's quite windy. It's called Creek Road. The locals call it Crick Road because Utahns talk stupid. And it had no sidewalks. It does now. Now it's very nice. But it had no sidewalks. It barely had a dirt berm. And we would ride our bikes, starting at about age 8, 9, we would ride our bikes over to where my parents worked, which was on State Street and about I-215 South.
Mm-hmm.
And at that age, we just hop on our bikes and go visit our parents. And nobody gave a shit, you know? And then, you know, one time my little brother thought that flipping people off wasn't real. He's like, it doesn't mean anything. Just somebody did it one day. It doesn't mean anything. Which, I mean, if you're going to go with the broader implication on sort of a philosophical ground, he's right. It's just a finger.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, if you want to get that far, I mean, nothing we do means anything.
Yeah. Was the line from Thor in Infinity Wars where they're like, that's not a word. You just made that word up. And he says, all words are made up.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, that's pretty fucking deep, Thor. Anyway, so, Shin Godzilla, great movie.
It's a great movie. This was Japan's first Godzilla movie in 12 years. Last time before that had been Godzilla Final Wars, which was supposed to serve as an end to the franchise.
I don't know why you throw away money.
Well, at the time, the Millennium stuff wasn't doing super well.
Yeah.
In Japan, people were kind of waning away from Godzilla. And then you got Godzilla Final Wars, and that was Godzilla's Infinity War.
Okay.
Because that's like an everybody is here moment. Even Zilla from the 1998 one shows up for a minute to get tail whipped into the Sydney Opera House and then exploded.
Wait, the giant iguana?
Yes.
Oh, I haven't seen this one. This is Final Wars?
Final Wars, 2004.
Okay, is that on HBO?
I think so.
Okay, I'm going to look that one up. I'd love to watch Iguana Boy get knocked into the Sydney Opera House. That makes me very happy.
Yes, he is in it for all of, I believe, 15 seconds.
Worth it.
Yeah.
Totally worth it.
And I think it's Sum 41 plays in the background, which is awesome. I think it's All to Blame by Sum 41 plays
okay.
during that.
I love it.
But yeah, this was, you know, a huge reawakening for Godzilla in Japan. It's continued to push Godzilla forward, which, you know, I personally love. This is huge. The Godzilla fans up a billion right now. It has never been a better time to be into Godzilla.
Yeah, very nice. Well, great. Well, let's do this. Let's take a little break. And then when we get back, we're going to time travel to the 80s. Surprise, surprise, surprise.
Shock horror.
Yeah, here we go.
In a world where MAGA is banning and burning books, it is a revolutionary act to read. It's Monday in America is a bold collection from the left show's J.M. Bell about politics, family, aging, and the uncomfortable truths we keep avoiding. No talking points, just real life in a divided country. Order your copy of It's Monday in America today for just $14.99 at MondayInAmerica.com. If you're looking to feel hopeful or inspired, or if you're just frustrated and unsure about where we're headed, this book provides a unique look at the life of a Gen X liberal, the challenges and victories, and the question, what kind of world have we built for our children? It's Monday in America. $14.99 at MondayInAmerica.com. It's Monday in America. Better to die on your feet than live on your knees.
What if there was one place where comic book fans could get everything? News, reviews, debates, and deep dives every single week.
And not just we read one issue and Googled the rest kind of takes. We're talking 15 years deep, over 600 episodes.
That's right. The world's greatest comic book podcast has been breaking down Marvel, DC, indie books, movies, and fandom culture long before it was cool.
Whether you're a lifelong collector,
a casual fan who just saw the latest superhero movie,
or someone trying to figure out where to even start,
we have got you covered.
And we don't always agree, which makes it way more fun.
Yeah, way more fun.
New episodes every Tuesday.
Real opinions, real conversations.
Zero gatekeeping.
Check out the world's greatest comic book podcast at thecomicbookpodcast.com.
Hey kids, comics!
Hey folks, Jeff here. So, you want to start a podcast? Maybe you already did and it's just not going the way you thought it would. Well, here's the truth. It's not about the mic, it's not about the software, and it's definitely not just about posting episodes. It's about building a show that people care about. That's why I created the Defenestrate Media Podcast Academy. It isn't theory and it isn't fluff. It's a step-by-step breakdown of what actually works. Choosing a name, choosing a topic, building your structure, growing an audience, trying to turn your podcast into a brand, and maybe even a business. If you're serious about podcasting, this is a good place to start. And if you're just tired of guessing, this is how you stop. Check out the Defenestrate Media Podcast Academy and build something worth listening to. You could find more information at theleftshow.com. So join me, if you will, the birthday boy. I was turning, 12? 13?
Okay.
The week of September 29th, 1985. I was a young man. No, I was a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, when this happened. And I remember a lot of this because I was old enough to pay attention, but the week of September 29th, 1985 was dominated by major global events, including the devastating 8.1 magnitude earthquake in Mexico City, the tragic Brixton riots in London, and the release of Back to the Future in theaters. But that's not what we're talking about. Okay. The Tylenol crisis. Late September marked the beginning of a fresh tragedy as the first five victims died in the Chicago area cyanide-laced capsule crime. Did you ever hear about this?
I remember a couple, like, maybe like 5-6 years ago, learning about that.
It was terrifying.
I can imagine just having, like, one of the most popular painkillers on the market having... that's potentially now laced with cyanide.
Yep.
And also people are dying from it, so it's real.
Yep. Yep. On September 30th, the New York Stock Exchange officially shifted its opening bell from 10 a.m. to 9:30 a.m., affecting nobody I give a shit about.
It's so we can do war on the weekends more effectively.
Yeah. The Nintendo Entertainment System, the NES, was rolling out its test market release in North America. Back to the Future was the number one box office hit. It doesn't... Roundup doesn't tell me what was in the top 100. But on September 29th, 1985... Now, imagine if you will, a suburban house, Sandy, Utah. We still had rabbit ears on our television. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know what those are. And in the antenna, and I had taken a piece of paper and written down the name of the show, the day of the show, and the time of the show, and then had taped that by two corners to the rabbit ears so as to not forget that on the evening of September 29th, I was going to watch MacGyver.
Mm-hmm.
That was when it debuted. Richard Dean Anderson. I love Richard Dean Anderson so much that when I was in my 20s, I wrote a song about him.
That's so awesome.
It's called I Want to Be Richard Dean Anderson.
That's so awesome.
I wrote a lot of songs in my 20s when I was playing with a band. And it's the one that my buddy that I was in the band with to this day still wants me to record for him.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, just sit down and do it. Just sit down and do it. Just record it and send it to me. I just want to hear it. Just sit down and do it. And I have not yet. It's very simple. It's three chords, you know, with a four chord chorus. And it's very simple. And no, I will not sing it for you now. just because I don't have a guitar handy. But MacGyver just won my heart immediately on that first show. And it's... There's nothing to it. It was a very simple storyline, but it started out with him climbing a cliff, doing dangerous stuff with a snarky little sarcastic attitude. And I was like, fuck this. I love this guy.
Yeah, and like all throughout it, he's telling the story of that Palomino, the horse.
Yeah.
Because when you told me that we were going to talk about this, like I said, I didn't have time to watch all seven seasons, so watched the first three episodes, very much enjoyed it. I'll probably made for some good because I really watched the first episode,
yeah,
and then kind of half watched the second episode.
Now the second episode, as I recall, is the one with the little village that they're making.
Yes.
Yeah, harvest poppies.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Very yeah, silly and, episode.
Yes. And then because I was working on a Gundam while I was watching this.
Oh, fun.
And this was just the most like excellent little like I can mostly pay attention, but be doing something with my hands show. But no, I really enjoyed it. And it's I like how the stories that he tells tie into what he's doing in the moment. I like his attitude on everything. It was very shocking to have the first episode open and see directed by Alan Smithy.
Yeah.
which was weird because why? Why did you hate this?
So Dana Elkar is the only other actor that did long haul on this. Richard Dean Anderson did 139 episodes of MacGyver between 85 and 92. Right? He got his 7 years, which is this that weird thing where they're like, oh, that's your seventh season. I guess you're done now. Never really understood that number. I still to this day don't. But yeah, Dana Elkar did 126 episodes basically playing MacGyver's boss at the Phoenix Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't think you've run into him yet.
No, because let's see. First episode was the first episode the bomb with the two scientists, or was that the third one?
No, that was the first one.
Okay.
The underground lab is destroyed in a mysterious explosion.
Yes, MacGyver that's is sent right. In to and rescue. Then he meets that that woman. I can't remember her name.
The blonde lady.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who I quite liked. I quite liked her character.
Yeah. No, she was no nonsense.
I liked that she wasn't like helpless. She was also, it appeared to be just as smart as MacGyver.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's Richard Dean Anderson is such a charismatic son of a bitch that when he swung over to Stargate, when I don't now. Stargate the movie is a wonderful piece of cinema. You know, I really like that movie. And have seen it many, many, many times. So when we heard that they were going to spin off to a TV series, we were all very excited. And then we found out that it had basically been taken away from the movie producers by these two TV producers. And it was shock and people were like, this is going to suck and I hate it and all of that. And I was one of those until I found out Richard Dean Anderson was going to be the lead.
Mm-hmm.
And he was going to be playing Jack O'Neill. And then there's a funny line in the first episode where he's like, no, you know, my name's O'Neill. One L. There's another guy. He's got two. He's pretty stuffy. And the O'Neill in the movie is spelled with two L's.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was cute. You know, they're like, well, let's preserve just the tiniest bit of continuity.
Yeah.
But I fucking love Richard Dean Anderson. And the fact that he's old and doesn't work anymore makes me kind of sad. I think he would do really good playing grandpa roles, you know, the sage grandfather kind of stuff. But I don't know. I mean, I don't really have a takeaway from it either. I mean, the only other TV show I was this excited for it to come out before it came out was V.
Okay.
And for those that don't know, for our younger listeners, V was these benevolent aliens that look just like us show up on Earth to help us solve our problems, to make sure we're fed and we have health care. And it turns out that they were really just fattening us up as cattle because they were lizard peoples wearing masks. And it was all really weird. There was an alien baby at one point.
That's a little bit the plot of Godzilla Final Wars.
Oh, okay.
Aliens show up on Earth to use humans as cattle. And then they're defeated by Godzilla.
Well, it was nice he was around.
Yeah.
It was nice he was around. But I do. I mean, there was sort of an overarching, not conspiracy theory, you know, like there was an undertone story, you know, from time to time that had to do. You had Bruce McGill was in it for 18 episodes, you know, playing Jack Dalton. And so there were bad guys and there were, but I mean, Terry Hatcher was in it for six episodes. You know, Bruce Hardwood was in it. You would know Bruce Hardwood. He was one of the lone gunmen.
Oh, okay.
Yep. But yeah, and so it Cuba Gooding Jr. was in it. James Hong was in it. It had a lot of really talented, well-known character actors that showed up to take parts in it. And so when the new series came out, it had a really, I think, a solid attempt at the spirit of the original show. But the kid who also played, oh, what the fuck? He was in X-Men. Havoc? That played the new MacGyver.
Yes, I think he was Havoc in First Class.
Yeah. And so I gave him a shot. And just he had a bodyguard, you know. He was involved with his bosses. He did what he was told for the most part. It was, you know, it just got silly fast. You know, I gave it a season.
Yeah, because I think, like, the thing that struck me most about MacGyver is he's the best of the best. He's the guy you call when you need results.
Yeah.
And you call him understanding that he's going to do it his way.
Yeah.
And I think to have that kind of thrown away on the new series kind of sucks.
It did. It just kind of murdered how much fun the original series was. But that's just it. That's all I got for MacGyver.
Okay. Yeah, fun show. I enjoyed what I watched.
Yeah, to this day, it's still one of my favorite shows of all time. And Richard Dean Anderson, I have written a song for no other actor. You know?
Richard Dean Anderson, if you want to come on the show.
I will sing the song if Richard Dean Anderson comes on the show. Absolutely.
Hurry here, folks. If we can get Richard Dean Anderson on the show.
So get on your social medias. And tell somebody who knows him, because he's not on social media. I think Amanda Tapping is on social media. I'd have to look it up. She was Colonel Carter in Stargate SG-1.
Okay.
You know, and Stargate SG-1, Stargate Atlantis, and Stargate Universe are three of my favorite sci-fi shows.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest. I can watch them, any episode, in any order, at any time. Netflix has SG-1 on right now.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can't figure out something to watch while I'm working, you know, because I like to have something making noise in the background while I work. It helps my brain.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
Yeah, Stargate or X-Files. That's what goes on. And sometimes it can't be X-Files because I end up looking.
Yep, I yeah.
Yeah. Because
X-Files
Amanda,
is...
Yeah.
X-Files is one of those ones where the thing I'm doing has to be optional. Like, it can't be work. Otherwise, I'm just going to watch the X-Files.
Yep. Yep. Well, that's it. I got nothing else this week, buddy. You got anything else?
No, I think that's it for me.
All right, brother. We're going to go do a Patreon over at patreon.com/dfenmedia, where every week that we record, we do some special content over there for you, our Patreon listener. You want to join us? Get more of this banter back and forth, the depth of our cultural exchange? It's over on Patreon. Patreon.com/DFenMedia, D-E-F-E-N Media. With that said, buddy, thank you for recording with me this week. This is fun.
Yeah, this is always a ton of fun.
All right. Well, I will see you next week.
See you next week.
Did you like the show? Join JM and Braxton on Patreon. Patreon.com/defendmedia. Each week they record, they upload additional content exclusively for the Patreon family. Patreon.com/defendmedia.